This is an ABC podcast.
This is Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
A special talofalava and pulavanaka to our Samoan and Fijian listeners as the Samoan men's and Fijiana women's team qualified for the Olympics in the sevens over the weekend, so congratulations to them. But as always, welcome to Nijan Footy, the number one spot to keep up to on all our rugby league and rugby union Pacifica talent. My name's Sam Wykes, and with me each week is the Cook Island working holiday specialist, Tinora Ororeti. You are the specialist.
Kia rana, Sammy, and kia rana to you listening to Nijan Footy, Cook Island working holiday specialist. You know what, we have a guest on our show later, and I'm going to prove to you...
He's going to testify.
That it's not working holidays that I'm going on.
It's a balance. I've got you evidence do both. There. You do both. You work and you're on holidays. So,
anyways, it was our first week without rugby league in a very long time, and yes, I'm feeling a little bit lost, but we still have a huge show planned for you today. I'm excited to hear from the guest of our first ever episode of Nijan Footy, Fa'amanu Brown.
What a champion that bloke is.
He's had a massive, massive year, and I just wanted to check in on his story. And if you don't remember, here's a powerful part of our chat we had with Fa'amanu Brown.
And there was a time where my mum was either going to get put into a rest home where they're pretty much on their last legs, and so you put them into a rest home where people look after them until they pass. Or we had an option where me and my brothers, we look after our mum 24 hours of the day. I was like, nah, boys, we'll take her into a rest home. And my brothers, because they know more Samoan, more like the Samoan way more than me, they go, nah, hell no, we're looking after her. And I was like, nah, like, boys, we all got family, we all got kids. Take less pressure off us by taking it to a rest home where people can actually professionally look after her and that she's in good condition, good home, good food. And then my oldest brother was like, nah, trust me, you'll understand once you start looking after her.
Yeah, Neil Brown's story went viral all over social media. I think it opened up a lot of conversations as well with the amount of positive feedback he received from that. So it was outstanding to hear that story. I know that was one of the most powerful stories I've ever heard.
We've also got Shelley Long that will be joining us, and another special guest. Do you want to share who it is, Sammy?
Yes, we are fortunate to have, he's rugby league royalty, but he's switched over to the better side, being rugby union. Frank Pulatua is now the GM of Oceania Rugby Union, and they had the Sevens tournament on the weekend in Brisbane, and he's going to come on and give us a bit of a recap on how that all went down.
Moment of the week.
So, Sammy, I was over at the NRL RLPA rookie camp.
And working?
Working, of course. Over the weekend.
Okay.
It was held in Parramatta in Sydney. And I just got a short clip to share with you at this. If you can hear the sticks in the background.
Is that you?
No, that's my good friend John O'Wright, ex-NRL Indigenous player. During the NRL and RLPA rookie camp, he taught the rookie class the Indigenous war dance. So they split up into two groups. They both do it against each other one at a time. But in this group that's playing now, we had Kulikefu Fine Feuyaki. He leads the Pacific Islander group within that team, within that half of the group. And then he shared, they end up moving forward and then doing a Tongan and Samoan cultural piece as well in the mix of the Indigenous war dance.
So with him, he's at the Cowboys. So does rookie camp, is that for everyone that's had their first year, or is it going into their first year?
We will speak about the rookie camp in the results and news.
Oh, awesome. I'm looking forward to that one.
This is about the moment.
The moment.
Our moment of
the week.
That's
a great moment. That is a great moment.
A huge moment where we got to see different cultures come within the one. Probably the first time I've seen it. You know, when you look at Tongan, Samoan, and Indigenous all coming into one cultural piece, It was really special to see, and especially seeing a player that we've mentioned here on our show, Kulikefu Fe'uyaki, lead that, and such a young player as well. He's only played maybe a few games in the NRL, made his debut this year, but for him to lead that group with in front of that crowd, huge leadership signs.
Kia ora, my name is Kiana Takairangi, and you are listening to Nation Footy.
And now we will touch on the NRL and RLPA rookie camp.
Sorry, bro, I jumped the gun.
No, we had Kulikefu. Yes, he has played a few games in the NRL, but every NRL player, as they go into their first preseason, they will have to do a rookie camp. It's a conference that's held over 2 days, held by the NRL and the RLPA. And it was really cool to see. So this is the first one that I've been a part of, representing the RLPA, where they've had the rookie class for next year's 2024 season. A lot of these players are going into, or all of them, or most of them, but a few, are going into their first full-time preseason, full-time environment. I end up catching up with a legend of our game, David Solomona, and I managed to catch up with him, and he'll go through it a bit better than I would. Right, so we're here at the NRL RLPA 2024 Rookie Camp, here with Kiwis and Samoa legend, and also Wakefield Trinity legend, David Solomona. David, thank you for joining us here on Nation Footy. What is your role at the NRL?
Talofa T, yeah. So my role essentially is player engagement and programs manager, which is a fancy way of saying I just run a bit of education programs and work with players.
Nice. With the rookie camp, how do you think it's all going over these last couple of days?
Yeah, it's been good. We got a large group of Pacifica players here, and really good to see a lot of them come into the system and be around there. And then, yeah, for me, it's probably even more encouraging seeing the amount of staff that are Māori PIs here working in the game as well. So, you know, hopefully we're lifting not just the standard of playing group, but also there's assisting the players as well.
100%. What is the purpose of the rookie camp?
Yeah, I guess it's just to give a bit of an introduction to players that are new into the full-time system or coming into the full-time system, a bit of an insight into what's required, life outside of football, but, you know, outside of training, outside of, you know, the ins and outs of a footballer, you know, just talking about social issues, you know, drug testing procedures, yeah, but everything. So for me, it's a bit of a great push for the role that I have in the game as well, just life outside of football. And I think for players, it's again another insight into what to expect if they choose to stay in the system.
And if there was one message you hope that the rookies can take away from this camp, what would that message be?
Yeah, probably not something that's been spoken about today, but yeah, something that I've learnt the older I've gotten, which is don't lose sight of your values and the things that your mum and dad, or those, you know, your grandparents or influential people in your life have taught you, you know, the importance around understanding who your family is, understanding, you know, maybe your faith or the perception around money and church and all that stuff. Yeah, I think just don't lose that, you know, come into this environment and continue to try and be who you were when you came in, and hopefully that will, you know, put you in good stead while you're going through your footy career.
Yeah, that's the rookie camps. They have them in rugby union as well. And the best bit about those camps is some of the lessons that you learn around footy gets played for 80 minutes on Saturday or Sunday or Friday, whenever it is. But the amount of countless hours that goes into preparing for that game, both on and off the field, is some of the biggest lessons I learned. One of them, I still remember to this day, two lessons that I learned at the union one that I went to back in 2008 now?
1908.
Wow. A while now, was percentages and tax. You know, that your manager takes 6% of your contract and then pretty much halve your contract number on the paper because the tax man takes it. And I was like, wow, so you get left with nothing. And then the other one was the lifespan of a professional rugby player at the time. It was 2 years.
Yep.
2 years. And you think of all the people that have played 10 plus years, it's a very, very small number of players, and the amount of people that play one game or no games, there's heaps out there. So that's what I took out when I was playing.
Yeah, a lot of these kids are coming straight out of school, so they wouldn't, you know, even be aware of the things that you mentioned around tax, which is why they had workshops that, you know, involved financial education. There was also cultural awareness social media and reputation programs, also workshops around the RLPA. We shared who we are and some of their entitlements as players. We've done some media training that I was involved with as well, where myself and David, we both split up in the end sides of the rooms, and then we'll grab one player at a time, and then we have to interview him in front of the camera and in front of the other players. But we started hitting them with some hard questions like, oh, is your coach, is it true your coach is struggling, or is it true a lot of your players go out? And just to see the reaction and how they would handle those kind of questions.
Any out there answers?
Oh, yeah, there were a lot of pressured players. They just looked nervous, eh? And like a lot of them were coming down going, man, I don't want to talk. And you see like the nerves really kick in. I also managed to catch up with a player, a Tongan player, that just come out and represented the Australia Schoolboys in Rugby League. He's going into his first pre-season for the St. George Illawarra Dragons, and his name is Finau Latu. Right, I'm standing here with a future superstar, Finau Latu. Thank you for joining us here, Finau. And what is one thing you'll take away from the rookie camp?
Yeah, thank you for having me. The one thing I'll take back from this is just what we've learned about the GOAT mindset. You know, there's a lot of players that wish to be here, and a lot of players that have come through here, but there's only very little that's gone through and made a difference in the game. So yeah, I just want to take on all I can and carry that on.
You just finished playing for the Australia Schoolboys. Do you pledge your allegiance to Australia or Tonga?
Oh, 100% Tonga, yeah. Game shape for Tonga. It's been a dream since I was young.
And why the Matima Tonga?
Well, I guess just ever since that World Cup 2016, always going to be Tonga.
T, you've hit him with a hard question. That piece is now going to be grabbed, played all over preseason. Latu has pledged for Tonga and he hasn't even played an NRL game. That's going to be the headlines.
It's all good, man. He it just goes to show the impact that the players, you know, that have led the way in the Tongan Matima Tonga team has had on our younger future stars.
I like that answer. I like it.
If you wanted to see that whole dance, it's on the RLPA Instagram page. Yeah, reach out and have a look.
Nisian footy.
Well, T, all our listeners, we're very lucky to be graced with the presence of royalty.
Rugby league royalty. Oh,
rugby league royalty has now
gone
crossed
to your game to help fix your game.
To help govern the game. Oh. Frankie Pulitu is the general manager of Oceania Rugby. As I mentioned, he's a former NRL premiership winning legend with the Penrith Panthers. He's just jumped off the plane as he just got back from the Oceania Sevens tournament that was held up in Brisbane. Frankie, thanks so much for your time, bro. I really appreciate it.
Lots of boys, mate. I'm on the sea floor.
Frankie, as the GM of the Oceania Rugby Union, what is your role?
Well, I just oversee all of its operations. So I guess the work we do, not only here, but also across the region with all of our Pacific unions, which is, I guess, you know, tasked by World Rugby to foster the, you know, the growth and development of the code across our region. So we work closely with Rugby Australia and New Zealand Rugby. We utilise a lot of their resources and expertise to grow the sport across the region. So as you would have seen over the weekend, we had a number of unions, some of the unions, you know, that that only really compete in that one fixture, you know, that one event throughout the whole calendar year. So, and we, you know, we were able to sort of bring them all together.
And so the Sevens were up in Brisbane. What was the vibe like up there with all the Pacific nations competing in that tournament?
Yeah, it was just amazing. I mean, I was so filled with not only emotion and passion, but it was just great to see, you know, all of our people come together in that way and really sort of enjoy each other's company. I mean, there were so many cultures represented all of that one space. I think over the weekend, we, you know, we really saw how sport can, you know, intersect with bringing communities together. And I think it was just a great celebration for our communities and our culture.
The big one, I guess, that came out of it was the Fijiana women's team qualifying for the Olympics, as well as the Manu Samoa Sevens team secure their first ever team sport to represent Samoa at the Olympics. Is that right as well?
Yes, correct. Yeah, so it was a huge milestone for, I guess, Samoa sport, but also, you know, for Manu Samoa national team to finally get across the line and be represented at the Olympics. And I saw, you know, with the guys at the end of that game, it was a, you know, really hard fought match. But just to see the guys collapse to the oval and in tears and, you know, hugging one another, you could sort of really appreciate how much it meant to them. And same for the Fijiana women's, you know, to get through, you could see how elated they were to achieve that, because it's a huge step forward for, you know, not only for those unions, but for our region to have that much representation.
Well, that's awesome. Also to see a number of different Pacific nations that we wouldn't usually see on the Seventh Circuit. You mentioned Fiji, Samoa, PNG.
Here it is.
How did my beloved country, the Cook Islands, go?
Cook's well represented by Sirionda. He was, you know, the president. He's very passionate, and he just he added a lot of colour, and he led that you know, the whole sort of cohort of the Cook's team. They performed really well. I mean, there was some guys in there that you know, they were still very much in their development sort of stage. They're quite young, you know, but that tournament will serve them quite well moving forward. And, you know, I could see a lot of those young guys being able to come back when they're, you know, a bit more developed in terms of their, you know, their physicality, etc., and they'd be able to come back and compete a little bit more on the field. There were a lot of unions that weren't far off. You know, they had some very good talent in those teams, but also some up-and-coming talent that, you know, really just need a little bit more development, a little bit more support.
See, I told you, Samuel, we done all right?
Yeah, you did all right. You should put the boots back on. You would be good at sevens. But what if you mentioned those teams, and I did see, you know, the Solomon Islands, Kiribati,
yes,
American Samoa, Niue, all of them were represented. Like, what was the feeling and the energy around those type of teams at the tournament?
Oh, you could just see how much it meant to them just to even be there. And there was so much singing that went on, and, you know, it was one of the most amazing experiences you could have as a, you know, not only as a fan, but also, you know, from my perspective as a sports administrator, be walking around and see how those type of events can bring people together. It was quite a unique sort of moment, listening to the different hymns. You know, the teams would get together in their own little areas and start singing hymns from their own nations, and it was just a powerful thing, and I could see how much the players enjoyed it. Especially with some of those young players from those unions, you know, who hadn't even been exposed to, you know, playing in stadiums.
Now, I agree. Sometimes when you can't win on the field, you can win off the field. Did we have a clear winner off the field when it came to, like, the hymns, the, you know, the war dances, or just the general celebrations from the crowds?
The cookies.
The cookies, yeah, that they do. I'm not going to argue with that one. Their hips can move.
The Cooks were certainly showed their presence. you know, the Samoans were there in numbers as well, you know. And, you know, they missed the memo, and they, you know, brought all of their flags into the grandstand, which created a really good spectacle as well. But, yeah, I mean, some of those nations, like the Solomons, I caught them just in the warm-up paddock. You know, they were getting ready for their match and sort of all got together in a circle and sang a hymn, and then they did a small prayer before they went out. And I just thought, you know, how much this means to a lot of those unions. You know, it's really important, the role that we play in being able to create these opportunities and create these types of tournaments for them to compete in.
I love your work, Frankie. Really appreciate your time and your platform, and what you're doing is amazing to create more opportunities for the smaller nations to compete on a global stage. And hopefully we can see you running Rugby Australia at some point in the near future, bro. So really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Nation Footy.
Thanks again, Frankie Pulitua. Really appreciate your time. And the overall winners was New Zealand, who beat Samoa 24-19 in Golden Point to be the Oceania champions. And up next, we have Shelley Long, who will fill us in the women's game.
She is back, our North Queensland Cowboy in the NRLW representative, and also our PNG Orchid Star with Rock Shoulders, who pumped my Cook Island Moana not too long ago. We have Shelley Long on The Long Story Short.
The Long Story Short with Shelley Long.
Shelley, it's the second week in a long time without women's footy. How does it feel?
Oh, it's sad. The training has definitely kicked up, though. We're pre-seasoning at the moment, and we're excited to be able to go into hopefully local league soon.
Do you remember that bit of advice I gave you at the when we first started chatting around going into pre-season?
Do more legs.
Yes.
Yeah, squat heavy. Get all your squats in now. Talk to us. What do you know?
So Rugby Sevens, we had the Oceania Cup. Fijiana have secured their spot in the Paris 2024 Olympics after beating the PNG Cassowaries 54-0. Sam, do you have any thoughts on that game or how both teams played?
I actually do. I watched the PNG team, the women's team, play about 10 months ago. Very raw. Like, I think their repeat efforts off the ground was a bit, you know, new to the game. Sevens is a different beast when it comes to your lung capacity, your repeat efforts. But 10 months on, they were so impressive. And when they beat Tonga in the semifinals, I was a bit heartbroken, but very impressed with the improvements that the PNG women's team have made.
Fijiana will now get to play the Aussies in the regional decider. The Aussie women's were unbeaten throughout the Oceania campaign as well. They beat Fiji in the final 26-0.
Ooh.
Talking about your Tonga team, Sam.
Yes.
The Tongan women had 9 women based in Tonga and 3 in New Zealand. They actually only got together the Tuesday before the tournament, but they had a great campaign.
Well, that's pretty impressive then to make the semifinals on, 3 days prep? Not bad for our Tongan girls. Well done. Let's just take a look back, because we didn't have you last week, just to look back at your time in PNG and looking back on when Elsie Albert first asked you about your PNG heritage and where you are now. How does all that make you feel now you've had time to reflect on it?
It was definitely a special moment to be able to represent PNG. Definitely something that I didn't see happening so soon, but I'm really grateful it did. And I'm really grateful that Elsie reached out to me and put my name out there to be able to play for the Orchids. I think I learned a lot when I went over there as well. Our second time around, we got to experience the true PNG culture. We got to go to the villages. We got to cook traditional foods. We got to go and visit schools, and it was honestly so incredible to experience all of that. And outside of footy, I don't think I would have been able to travel there by myself. I don't think that's something that I would have done. So through footy and through the opportunities that footy have given me, it's definitely a blessing.
Sounds very special. If there's one thing that you think you could take away from the campaign and playing for the PNG Orchids back to home, what would that one thing be?
I definitely think it would be being the happiest I can be. I think when you're talking to the people and when you're learning from them and when you're being around them, they have so much love for you learning, and they have so much happiness for you to learn and to actually spend the time with them. And I think when I was trying to learn a lot about the culture and the way they do things there and how they are and how they talk, they just made me feel so happy, and they were so happy that I had spent the time to actually try to learn.
That's cool. It's those humble beginnings when you go back and you see the adversity, but you still see the smiles that brings things, you know, it really hits home to say, you know, whatever my biggest problems are, I think we're going to be okay, because I've just learned so much from being back home. Love that, Shelley. Absolutely love it. Any other rugby league news?
So I've got a little update. The first ever Vanuatu Rugby League Women's National Team will enter into the Pacific Games. It's exciting news for Vanuatu, and I can't wait to see how the girls go. There's one more exciting piece of news today. Origin Women's will go to a 3-game series, with the first game to be May 16th as an opener to the Magic Round. This has finally been confirmed and is so exciting for women's rugby league in Australia.
That is awesome news for the women's.
Big news.
Yeah, it's so exciting. The girls have been obviously speaking a lot about this, how much they've been wanting a 3-game series. So for this to happen and this movement to happen, it's incredible.
Well, moving on to the Boys Don't Know question for Shelley. Shelley, do you have any superstitions? Is there someone you've played with who does anything, something wild before they play?
Well, I don't have a superstition anymore. I used to when I was younger. I used to have this old, dodgy-looking sports bra. I won my first game in it, my second game. And then it became a ritual that and superstition that I had to wear it for every game and I'd win. And then I lost in it, so then I chucked it in the bin. But it had holes in it. It was loose elastic. Honestly, I do not know how I kept wearing that thing.
How many games in a row did you win?
Oh, only probably like six or something, but when I was real young. And sports bras don't last very long. The quality in the bras do not last.
Did you ever play with anyone with any superstitions?
Yeah, we've got one girl at the Cowboys. She's got a funny as superstition. She does not eat meat before a game.
Oh, really?
And she reckons she plays better if light, she doesn't eat meat.
Light in the stomach?
Yeah, just feel a bit light.
So what? Do you know what she does eat?
She eats like vegetarian dishes. If there's not much of a vegetarian variety,
makes sense.
On there.
Yeah, if you're not eating meat, yeah, it's either vegan or vegetarian. She can't be Pacific Islander, surely not. No way.
Well, she is it, but
I thought so.
She'll get like a Thai meal that's vegetarian.
Ah, interesting. Here's one of my ones. I reckon you should do it before your next game, and you'll win. Put your left sock on before your right, and then your left boot on before your right, and then do your left shoelace before your right shoelace and watch you perform like a beast.
How many games did you win with that?
Good question.
It's not about winning. It's not about it's about how your performances. Sometimes
actually, did not create these superstitions because I went through a phase where it was just like too many.
Sam, what about you?
What did I do? I was a big peanut M&Ms and popcorn night before the game. Make sure you pour your peanut M&Ms inside the popcorn and you grab them together and you put them all in your mouth and watch the movie. That was mine before every game.
Was there a set movie or was it whatever was on?
Whatever was on. It got to a point where I was just watching anything. And then it got to a point where I would watch the movie at home, but I'd still travel to the cinemas because I like the cinema popcorn.
I don't think I'll be doing that one with the fuel prices, but I'll definitely keep that in mind.
Hey, we heard what you eat before a game. And
yeah, exactly. Don't you be throwing stones at Domino's pizza. Well, we always love your work and hopefully we can talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thanks, guys.
Challenge of the week.
Yes, our challenge of the week this week is going to be unreal, with T about to commentate one of his many hundreds of tries. It took me ages to figure out which one that we're going to use. One out of the five. Is it five he scored or six?
Six.
Six tries. So we've chosen one of those.
Eaten more pies than scored tries.
Exactly. Exactly right. And I haven't showed you which try it is yet.
No. Nah.
So you're just going to see it fresh now, and I want you to do your best.
All right, let's go. Ready? And it is the last play. The Wakefield legend, Tinilo Arona, goes up for fifth tackle pressure. Oh, Sean Kinido has the ball, and he offloads to the Wakefield Trinity legend. He's running. He makes the 40. He makes the 30. He's in the clear. No, wait. Someone's catching up. Oh, and he scores in. Try. Four-pointer, and he points to the North Stand in celebration of a 53-meter try in total. Did I just call myself legend? What an incredible and magical moment. There you have it. So I will talk you through that moment now that I can remember.
Please do. Please do. I felt like I was there. That's not bad.
Do you know have you heard of kick pressure?
I have heard of kick pressure.
Kick pressure. Kick pressure. So on the last tackle, usually the hard workers and the effort-based players, or if you're the first marker, you have to go put pressure on the kicker so he can not get a nice, clean kick away. So I've been doing this for the last, 12 years? 11 years.
Been a legend?
No.
Oh.
Kick pressure.
Oh, kick pressure.
You know, trying to make that effort for the back three, the fullback or the winger, to get a clean catch or shank the kicker's ball. Anyways, they end up running it. I run past and then I start walking back because I can't get involved in the next play because it's too far ahead. Sean Kennedell, my ex Sydney Roosters teammate, ends up having the ball. He skips around. So I'm out the back about 10, 15 meters away, and I start screaming his nickname, Skids. And I'm like, Skids, Skids. Then all of a sudden I just see him turn around, look at me, and then throw me the ball. Ball's in the mid-air. I look at his face, and he's like, what the heck? And I caught it, turned around, started running. Funny thing was, the whole KR players were like, thought that they couldn't catch me, and they realized in the last 10, 20 meters that they could have caught me, but realized too late. So I beat them all to the try line.
Outstanding, T. I'm going to give you 8.5 out of 10.
Nesian Footy with Sam and T.
Sammy, we have a very special guest, a good friend of ours. He was our very first guest on Nesian Footy, and his story touched thousands, if not millions. I want to introduce to our listeners Fa'amanu Brown. He has played in the NRL. He's played over in the UK. He's now represented both Tor Samoa and the New Zealand Kiwis, and just won the Pacific Championships for the Kiwis. So, Fa'amanu Brown, thank you for joining us once again. It is your time, part two. Let's go.
Yes.
Thanks for having me on, boys.
Just to kick us off, we've got some audio here for our listeners that didn't hear your first interview and we just wanted to share with you.
Bro, we literally cleaned it, washed it, bro. Like, for us males to see a Polynesian female's body, bro, it's sacred. You know, their yep. body is sacred. And so, bro, the first time I washed my mum and had to undress her, bro, I just, like, cried. And I was just like, holy heck. For females, bro, if you show a lot of skin, it's obviously disrespectful yeah. to your family, your ainga. So, bro, for me to see my mum undress and wash her, you know, wash her down, I just cried. She cried, bro, and I just went, man. I realized then, bro, I was like, holy heck, it's an honor. And then it was after the whole 3 months, bro, to the time that she passed, bro, it was like the greatest achievement of my life.
Man, that interview is back in April, and still to this day is one of the most powerful stories I've ever heard. Noel, like, honestly, we want to thank you for sharing that. Like, when you hear that back, how does that make you feel, and how much feedback did you get from that story?
Yeah, bro, when I heard back, I sort of just reminisce on my whole journey, bro. Most recent thing was obviously winning the Pacific Championship for, not just for my country, but just for my ainga, my family. Sort of just, yeah, brings my feedback down to earth a little bit. But yeah, bro, the direction that I got from it was just pretty much our whole Pacific culture, bro, just coming together. And a lot of people that sort of resonate with that story, you know, a lot of lost loved ones, a lot of people, bro, it's still to this day, bro, like a lot of people in our culture, they do that now still with their grandparents or, you know, their uncle, their mom, their dad. So, you know, it's so good, bro, that I can share that kind of light on my experiences, because I know there's so many people out there that, you know, it's hard for them to stay in it when the times get tough. So a lot of feedback, but also, you know, it's okay when you're struggling. And, you know, for me to give that hope sort of fills my cup a bit too.
Just like Sammy said, I just want to say thank you, man. You set the tone for our show and set us off on this journey here on Nesian Footy. But yeah, thank you for sharing that story. Has that story popped up over the last, you know, 8 months since you first shared that experience?
Yeah, bro, still get a bit of attraction from it on Facebook. Honestly, I didn't realize it was going to sort of blow up. But in saying that, bro, like, the best way to be is just to be yourself. And if you are who you are and you just continue to be genuine, you know, people see that.
Can you talk us through your footy journey for this year and how much it sort of meant for you and how it's all played out?
Yeah, bro. Obviously, when I spoke to you guys, I was sort of just starting out the Dogs, which I was really excited for. Unfortunately, things didn't work out the Dogs, and sometimes that's just how the business goes. And I was lucky enough to, you know, leave there halfway throughout the year and get around with the Newcastle Knights, which I was so very grateful. Like, they gave me another lifeline. Like, I always say this to people, that my goal is to try and play for every NRL team in the comp. Nah, jokes. But yeah, bro, like, honestly, I'm so lucky, because, you know, it's the game is such a cutthroat sport.
You know, if you don't perform, you don't play. So for me, you know, in the Bulldogs' eyes, I wasn't performing to their expectations. So, you know, they put people in front, and that's just how the business goes. But then I was lucky enough to, you know, for Newcastle to give me that shot again. And I think I played about 2-3 games there, and I was 18th man to go into the semi-final of NRL competition. So, you know, I was so lucky for them. And also, you know, obviously getting the call up for the Kiwis has been buzzy as, it's still buzzing now, you know. And I think it's something that I'll talk about for the rest of my life.
You know, the feeling of not being wanted in the professional sport, it's a reality. It's going to happen to everyone at some point in their time, some more than others. I've been in that boat as well. My goal was to play for every Super Rugby club as well, since you put it that way. But, you know, when the news came and you went to the Knights, your mindset going there, was it just full of confidence? I've got, sweet, I've got another opportunity? Or was it like, oh, is this the last ditched effort? What's going to happen after this?
Yeah, pretty good that you said that. Because, like, when I got an offer from the Newcastle that, you know, they wanted me over there for the second half of the year, I didn't want to go, bro. And, you know, with rugby league and sport in itself, you make so many good friends. You know, you meet so many people that become, you know, your brothers, because you work so hard together. And so for me, I didn't want to go. But my partner, my fiance now, she literally pretty much said, you need to wake up, get out of this situation that you're in, and go. And she's like, I know you're, you know, that kind of loyal person to the boys, you know, you want to stay there. And honestly, the dogs said that, you know, you could stay, but you're not going to be playing NRL. And so for me, I had to sort of wake up and just be like, okay, well, if I'm not going to be playing NRL, then I'm not going to be able to provide food on the table for my family. So I made the decision to go, and man, it's all paid off in the end day, to be honest. At that time, when I was going to Newcastle, I was going to quit. So I was going to retire, bro, just get a full payout. The Bulldogs needed a top 30 spot for Liam Knight to come in. So they needed to shop someone. So I was like, man, you know what? I'm willing just to retire and just go into videography. Because, yeah, I was just thinking, man, I'm done. I'm tired. You know, this is my, what, third, fourth club. And so for me, bro, the light was pretty dim, man. Bro, literally just knowing my journey, bro. I think my experience of who I am and where I come from, like what I said to you guys in the first interview, you know, we're not from a lot. Most families, you know, state house kid, three bedrooms with nine siblings in it. So for me, bro, I know I've come from the depths, and I'm like, why not just keep fighting, man? And that's who my mum was, and that's who I am.
Just like what we say, man, pressure makes diamonds, and you were definitely shining as soon as you put that jersey on. And then, man, we didn't even mention talking about the selection for playing for the Kiwis, let alone the Tor Samoa as well. Yeah, how did that all play out?
Yeah, bro, it was buzzy. Like you guys know, I'm an open book, bro, so I've got nothing to hide. But, bro, pretty much Tor sort of called me probably two, three weeks before the selection, before the team gets announced. And I was sort of 50-50, bro. They said, oh, we don't know if you're in it. You're in the wider squad. And I was like, oh, far out. Just to be in the wider squad is pretty mean. Like, that I could still do it. And then literally, bro, I think it was probably like 5 days out before the team selection, Madge called me. I've had some past experiences with Madge as my head coach at the Tigers, and he was the man for me. And also, bro, he just... Yeah, so then I got a phone call. I was out to dinner with all my loved ones back home in New Zealand. And also, this was the first time that my fiance and her family came over to New Zealand. So just for all of them to connect before, you know, a year till we get married. And so they were all together, and then Madge called me, and I was buzzing out. I was like, what the hell? I was like, I wonder why he's calling me. And then so obviously he asked the question, and I was just like, I swear, I think I paused for like 30 seconds. And I was like, how the hell am I getting selected? Like, bro, I've barely played in NRL this year. I've only played a couple of games. But there was, I think, 3-4 hookers that were injured. And so for me, I was like, man, I know, like, this is not probably the right way that I would want to make it. But at the same time, I was like, bro, this is my opportunity. This only comes once in a lifetime, man. And so I went and asked my dad, and I said, oh, Dad, I just got called to play for the Kiwis, but I wanted to ask you first before I make the decision. And bro, my dad is so, you know, all parents, bro, they're just so proud of their kids. And so for my dad, bro, he's always carried, like, wearing his Samoan jacket, you know. And the man, when I asked him the question, the man unzipped his jacket and he had an All Blacks polo on.
No way.
Right. He had an All Blacks polo on and he goes, son, you know. And honestly, this is his first words. He goes, you have achieved in mine and mum's dream. Now it's time to go achieve your dream. And bro, like, for me, I was just like, man, that's the only reassurance that I need. Nothing else matters, you know.
Man, I think you are the definition of resilience and perseverance. Seriously, like, the amount of times we've heard stories from yourself where it's sort of, for anyone else who didn't have that inner strength, there would have been a moment where they're just quitting. And you deserve and earned every opportunity that's come your way. That's amazing to hear that story. The feeling of playing against the Kangaroos.
Pause that. Can we touch on your experience playing Tor Samoa first? He was playing the Tor Samoa.
Oh, sorry, I forgot about that. Yeah. Let's go to that one first.
That was a hard one. That was probably the hardest game I've had to play, just sort of getting up for it. You know, obviously I've been on the other side where I'm doing the Sivatal, and then, you know, the other side of receiving the dance. And to look across the other side and see my Usos there. You guys know the game. Once you step over the white line, it's them or us, you know? And so for me, bro, I just was like, nah, I know who I am. This is who I'm representing. I'm representing my inga here. And these are my brothers that are going to go to war for me. And so that was the hardest thing, bro. Even like, I was getting a lot of smack talk on the field, you know, me being caught a traitor, but even like walking out and like us being booed, bro, like that was hard, man. Like the mental state for even like, not just for myself, but for the Samoan boys that are playing for the Kiwis, you know, that are New Zealand born, they grew up, you know, living the New Zealand lifestyle. That was the hardest thing, bro, was copying, honestly, abuse from not even just like on the day, but even just the media outlets, man, which was hard for the boys. And I'm so proud of the Kiwi Samoan boys. Just, you know, it's hard for all Aingas to see your loved ones being tortured online, you know. And so for them just to be, you know, still strong and just be so professional about it, man, it takes a lot.
You actually had a fair few Samoans in that Kiwis team. You know, Nelson Asofa Solomona, Dylan Brown, yourself, Jermaine Isako, Moses Leota, Ronaldo Mulitalo, Isaiah Papali'i. Did you ever have a conversation between each other about overcoming the situation where you're copying it from the Samoan fan base or the Samoan people?
Nah, bro, we didn't really have any. Like, we had small talk between each other. I think it was more just like, I don't know what it is, bro, but when you're brought up in New Zealand, it's such a multicultural country, you know. And like, honestly, bro, like there's that many, like, you know, so many Indians and Chinese people in New Zealand that full, you know, can almost talk Māori. You know what I mean? Because they embrace the culture, honestly, when you're a kid growing up in New Zealand, all you see is watching the All Blacks or the Kiwis, and you just want to be one of them, you know. And it doesn't. Doesn't mean that we're not proud of being Samoan too, because bro, like, I know where my parents come from. They come from the depths, you know, but they moved here for better opportunities, you know. And so for me, for my reason playing for New Zealand is because, man, I know that New Zealand gave my family a better life.
Man, you've just proven that the talk, so you can have two loves, you know, when you represent the narrative going around, like, you can't, you got to choose one. No, for multicultural, even here in Australia, it's the same thing. There's a lot of Pacific presence here in Australia, and it's multicultural as well. And, you know, if you don't give everything and play that game, you know there's always going to be talk. But when you take it to them physically and accept that challenge and you embrace, you know, after the game, that noise dies down because, you know, we came out on top and we've earned that respect. Anyway, moving on. Apologies, I should have asked that talk question before this one. But moving on to then playing against the best in the world, Australia, what was the preparations like? What was Madge like as a coach and the mindset leading into that, especially because you lost the first game and then you just backed it up with a win in the second game and to win the whole thing?
Yeah, well, obviously after the first game against Samoa, bro, we were just like, our confidence was just so high, bro. Like, it just felt like nothing can defeat us. And then coming into that second game, bro, we done a bit of video and a bit of research on, you know, individuals. And I think it sort of took our eyes off us, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And I think, bro, after that second game, bro, we walked off the field. And I swear we're in the sheds, bro. We're like, bro, we've got these guys. It didn't even feel like a loss, to be honest, because like we're like, man, we played our worst game, they played their best game. And honestly, if you look at that game, we were 8 points down with 8 minutes to go. You know, and then obviously they scored two late tries. But for our mindset going into that third week, we didn't even do any video on Aussie that whole week. Nothing about them. We just focused on us. Our skipper, James Fisheris, he wanted us to watch Richie McCaw's doco, and it's called Chasing Great. And then he was like, boys, you know, I feel like there's a lot of gold in this. And I want you guys to watch it, thinking about the game that we're going into. And why? And then, story short, just why Richie was so successful was that he loved pressure moments. Ever since he was a kid, he was always trying to find pressure moments because he knows that, like you said, T, it makes diamonds. For me, bro, for myself, I was like, fire out. This is the highest. This is one shot at it. And I know, like when we face adversity on that field, that's what we want. We want to walk towards the pressure. And that's what Fish said. He goes, boys, on the game day, he was like, boys, we're walking towards pressure. He goes, when you're hurt, when there's nothing in the tank, you go again. Like, we were battered and bruised after that second week against Aussie. Everyone was feeling sore. And I remember, I think it was like 2-3 days out before the game, and we had a big session coming up. And I remember Fish just got us in the huddle, and he goes, if you're sore, don't be sore.
That's the Fijian saying, if you're tired, don't be tired.
Yeah, but bro, like, and that's the mentality that he brought from Penrith. You know, him and Moss, they carried that. You know, they're the first ones to get on the field, the last ones to get off. And that's why they're so successful. And so, honestly, just being around that kind of energy and that vibe it took us to a whole nother level.
Oh, man, congratulations. You know, huge achievement, especially in your own books. You know, what James Fisher-Harris said, the captain of the Kiwis, about pressure, it kind of paints your journey, you know, walking towards pressure and overcoming
100%,
you know, different obstacles. But where to next?
Yeah, bro. So I wanted to sign with Newcastle again, but just the way the business is, bro, they had limited top 30 spots, and a lot of those top 30 spots were filled with my position. That's just how things are. And I'm off to go to Super League for 1 year. But I'm excited, man. I'm excited to go back to England and put my foot on that competition, to be honest. But I've only signed it for 1 year. So, you know, me, bro, just trying to travel to different clubs and see. I'm not shutting the door in NRL. Yeah, excited to go to England, bro. Excited to travel with my fiance too. It'd be cool experience, bro. But yeah, this time I'm going to be playing in the Super League, not the league below Super League. So, bro, there's so much I can take out from this campaign that I just went through with the Kiwis. So hopefully, bro, and I know I'll be a different player because of it.
Is that the reason why you took 1 year deal? Like to open that opportunity to come back?
Yeah. So with the way rugby league works, obviously there's only 30 spots in every team, and when you sign so late for the next year, they're usually mostly taken. So now I'm actually available to negotiate for the year after. So that's why I've just sort of left it open. But you know, you never know. I might like it there, and the club and the fans there. And, you know, who knows, bro? Like, you were there for years, so.
Before I let Sammy wrap us up, I need to settle something. So
he's there pointing at me, goes, I've got one more. I was like, oh, where's this going?
I've got some evidence here. I went over there on behalf of the RLPA, and you believe that I was not working, but I'd done my presentation in front of the Kiwis, and New Brown got to experience my first presentation in front of an international men's team. Whamau New Brown, please tell my man here there working and how that all played out.
Bro, he actually spoke really well. I was actually quite surprised. So I was thinking, surely this does. Bro, and then even the boys asked him a few questions, and he answered them. He answered them pretty good.
Man, okay. All right, so you got one out of three have said that you're actually working over there. So if you get one more, then I'll believe it. But honestly, Noor, I we really appreciate your time once again, and I really mean what I said when you're the definition of resilience and perseverance. Hopefully you can teach me how to do that dance that you did on TikTok. How it looks like, I don't know, that breakdancing one where, how do you get up from there?
I don't know. You know, but that's probably that door, because that's probably what gets you kicked out of clubs.
Well, sweet ass. On that note, bro, unreal to have you, and we wish you all the best. Much love.
Much love. Thank you for having me, eh?
Nesian Knowledge.
Nesian Knowledge. T, it is my turn this week to give you those hard-hitting questions.
Entertaining questions.
Entertaining, hard
for our listeners to answer.
Well, tell yourself that when you come up with the questions, because our you make them really hard.
Known more than three Samoan players that played for the Kiwis.
All right, I'm sure our listeners will know this one as well, which you should know.
Score update. Anyway, before we get what started, 9.5 to me and 9 to you.
0.5 the difference.
Yes.
Oh, here we go. And T, this week's questions for Nesian Knowledge is all based around sevens. So question one, a sevens player named Alicia Quirk. She played for Australia. However, in sevens, if you don't make your nation's team and you're the home tournament, you get put into a pool of players where other nations can choose you. So you can actually represent another nation.
You have to be from that heritage or that...
No. So like if the tournament's, say, held in the Gold Coast where this one is, and you don't make your Australian team, you get put into like an injury crisis pool, because remember, they're traveling from all around. They can only bring 12 players. Oh,
so they're like wild cards.
Wild cards. Yep. That's a good way to put it. Wild cards. Okay. She played for which Pacific nation? A, Fiji. B, Samoa. C, Tonga. Or D, PNG.
Ooh. So you said...
I was in the Gold Coast Sevens. And yep. this mate, this girl...
I'm going Tonga.
You going Tonga?
Tonga. C, Tonga. Locker it in, Eddie.
No, damn it, you got it right.
There was a bit of thinking behind that, but yeah. I was thinking you would have known some Tongan news being Tongan.
Yes.
Logic.
You're right. That's okay, let's move to the next one. Name me the Samoan Sevens coach.
Brian Lima.
Do you know his son's name in that Samoan Sevens team on the weekend?
Wait, so I got a point for Brian Lima. Yeah, you got a point. His son's name is Brian Lima.
That's PJ.
Oh,
it's Brian.
I just thought it would be
Brian Jr.
Brian Jr.
Oh, wow. That's two. Yes. Is this a first?
This is the first and you've ever been throwing some mean sevens questions.
Oh, they're actually, I made them easy for you. I made them easy. See, entertaining.
They're not easy.
Okay, you should know this one. Because as you haven't really had a lot of faith in your Cook Island teams. Cook Island's played against the Solomons, or the Cookie, I think it's Ariini?
Oh, Airani. Cookie Airani, it means island.
Oh, okay.
Cookie Airani.
There we go. That was a female team. They played against the Solomons. Who won?
I reckon the Cook Islands won, because the Solomon Islands are preparing for the games.
Yes, T. 3 from 3.
3 from 3. Is that the first?
That's a first ever.
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 Did you do them questions this morning?
Yes, I did.
That's what happens when you don't prepare well.
No, it is. That's what happens when you just want to make it light-hearted. Unreal episode, T. Unreal show. Really appreciate all you listeners tuning in. That's the end of our show. Join us next week on ABC Radio Australia, or listen any time wherever you get your podcasts.
And I'm off on another working holiday. Ka kite.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.